All right. So I want to thank Neil and Anne for giving such a great introduction to my talk and allows me to skip over some slides. So I'm going to also be talking about the environments of lens galaxies. And just to start out with, I'm showing a beautiful image. This is a 20 orbits of ATS time on HST that we got to look at. But to look at a lens, but it also is great for allowing you to study the environment of a lens. The lens is going to say right there. I'll talk about this more later. So, as most of the speakers have done, I have a sort of broad interpretation of my remit. So I'll talk about the local environment of lenses, something very similar to what Anne discussed. Then I'll talk about not-so-local environment of lenses, which Anne also mentioned. And then maybe at the end, if there's time, I'll talk about the very local environment of one particular lens. All right, so I don't think I need to motivate this so much since Neil and Anne have done this, but it is just to reiterate a bit, you know, it's important to try to understand the systematic effects that measurements of H-naught. And I'm picking H-naught just because 2 weeks here at KITP, it's been a very active area of discussion amongst the people here. And so when you're dealing with systematics, there are nice systematics and not so nice systematics. Or maybe these are known unknowns and unknown unknowns. But in any case, what I call a nice systematic is one that perhaps acts as a systematic for any one individual lens system, but from lens system to lens system is a random effect. And if it is a zero mean effect, then you can beat down the noise by averaging over a lot of lens systems. And this is something that Chuck also mentioned yesterday. Then there are the ones that are not so nice. And in this case, you probably have to approach each lens and model it extremely well. And the quote that came up in our discussions is excruciating detail. This is sort of the level that you may have to model each lens to understand these effects. Okay, so I'm just going to skip this slide since it's been discussed before. Mass sheet degeneracy, we have to worry about it in lenses. Thanks, Neil and Anne. Okay, and so as Anne mentioned, finding groups at these moderate redshifts is a lot of work. It's hard to do. They don't jump out at you as clusters do. And so here I show a nice deep Keck BRI image. This is the field that contains the 0712 lens. And it's not completely obvious where the group is. Those are the confirmed group members in the system. There's a foreground group to the lens. The lens system is actually here in the background of this group. This is something that Lori and I worked on. So as Anne has been doing, we've been doing a systematic investigation of lens environments. Basically the same method. We have wide field multiband imaging with the Palomar 60 inch and LIC. We select targets based on colors and proximity to the lens system, and then we follow up with multi-slit observations with the big telescopes, so Keck and Gemini. And we look for galaxy associations that are compact, both in redshift space and on the sky. And this is something that Lori and Gordon Squires and I have been working on for years. And it sort of crawled along, and then Matt Auger, who's a graduate student working with me, who's here at the conference, has really given it a lot of energy. So we're moving forward now. So I'll show you a, sort of a typical result from this program, by which, of course, I mean the most interesting result from the program. And this is the lens 1608 plus 656. And this lens is of particular interest because it is one of the time delay lenses. It's one that I spent many years of my life measuring the time delay for, so I have a particular interest in it. And I never seem to be able to get away from this particular lens. And this is the result of our spectroscopic program. We have 90 redshifts along the line of sight. You can see there's quite a bit of structure here. I show you very narrow redshift fins. These are fins of 0.005 in redshift. And you see a clear highest spike. I guess you can always define the highest spike, and that's this one here. This is the one that includes the lens galaxy itself at 0.63. There are other spikes along the line of sight. maybe I'd say at least two galaxy groups. So this one here at 0.4, I believe is a real group. This thing at 0.5 is probably a filament. And this thing at 0.2 something is sort of too spread out, too close to us for me to tell whether it's a real group or something like a filament. Just to zoom in on the group that includes the lens, here it is as 9 confirmed members. Here is the distribution in velocity space. It's actually a fairly smallest group. The velocity dispersion is only 150 kilometers per second. And this shows the location of the group on the sky. So here we have sort of an 8 arc minute field of view. The black dots here are all the galaxies that are brighter than R of 23, than R of 23. That was our spectroscopic limit. The blue circles are galaxies for which we have redshifts. So you can see those galaxies are spread out over the whole field, and the galaxies with the red boxes are the ones in the group. So it's compact on the sky here. This pink dashed circle, which you may not be able to see from the back, this represents one co-moving h inverse megaparsec at the redshift of the lens. And so you have 8 of the 9 are within 1 megaparsec of the lens system, which is sitting right here at 0.0. I mentioned that I believe that there's a second group here. This is the one at 0.4. It's about an arc minute away, excuse me. It's also very compact in the sky. It's around 300 kilometers per second. Okay, another interesting thing about this line of sight, we found out when we looked at those really deep HST images, just to show you how much structure there is. Here is the main lens system again. This is 16OA, it's a 4-image lens. And here and here are two nice, strong lens candidates, which I've blown up here on the side. And these are each within 40 arc seconds of the main lens. So this tells you something about this line of sight. Pretty neat. This one here, which is the one here, this is a member of the group that includes the lens and galaxy. So this is in that 0.63 group. This one here is a member of the group at 0.4 that I showed you before. So we had a paper come out just recently on that. Okay, so just to summarize what we've done with the this local environment, we found several new lens group associations. Here's the 16OA that I've spent my time talking about. There's lots of things along the line of sight there. There are two more here from Matt Auger. He has a poster up outside. You can look at that. There's one from John McKean and Prep, and then the one I showed you at the very beginning. The two lenses here in white are also lenses that Anne had boxed in blue on her initial mugshot. These are time delay lenses. And for those, we find the effects on H-naught are sort of a few percent in our best estimation. Once again, I would say that 1115, which I assume is your 10% effect on H-naught, is... Oh, okay. Okay, interesting. Okay, also... So part of this, Anne mentioned that, you know, having a sample of groups associated with lenses does give you groups at moderate redshifts, and we've had Chandra follow-up observations of two of these lenses that we've discovered in the groups, and I can talk about this in the discussion, but it's just another way of studying groups at moderate redshift that would otherwise be very difficult to find. Okay, I did want to mention extremely briefly that, you know, Anne's group and my group are not the only people doing this. Cecile Faure did an analysis of at least 8 lens systems where she looked at photometry and weak lensing of them. And Lexi Moustakis has recently found lenses in the extended growth strip. And the nice thing about this is that you have tons of redshifts already. And so this is his plot of... the environments of two lenses. So we show in the plane of the sky, in this axis along the line of sight here, this is the location where the lenses looks like it's in a big clump of stuff. Here's another one that is in a lower density environment. You can look on AstroPH or talk to Lexi about this. All right, now we're moving to from the local environment to this other question that Anne mentioned, that along the cone that these lens systems lie in. Do they lie in a biased line of sight? And here I'm looking at the contribution of large scale structure. And so people have done analytic or have studied this question and shown that the effects on time delays or on the Hubble constant from sort of large scale structure, these sheets and buoys along the line of sight, is on the order of a few percent. And that it should be random from lens system to lens system. So for each individual lens system, this is a systematic effect. But because voids can act as areas of negative mass density, sort of you can get sort of a plus or minus effect along random lines of sight. So along random lines of sight, this is a random effect, and it should be zero mean. And the question, as Anne brought up, is do lenses lie along random lines of sight? If they do, then this is a zero mean effect, and we can average over lots of lens systems and beat down the effect. If not, this is maybe something else that you have to investigate. And so this is something that I started doing it originally started out as a project for an undergraduate, Ken Wong, and then Leon and I are expanding this, and we're just doing the simplest possible thing. We're counting galaxies. So what we're doing is we've taken the ACS images from the CASELS program, plus that ACS image of 1608 that I showed you, and this gives us a sample of 20 fields containing gravitational lenses. Each of them has exposure times of around 1,000 to 2,500 seconds in F814. Okay, this is our test sample. Of course, you need the control sample. And our control sample is the COSMOS survey, which is the biggest HSC imaging survey to date. And we were using the first 1 square degree of the data, which gives us 257 ACS fields. Typical exposure time is about the same as for the lens systems. And I say here control sample number one because when I talked about this in Leiden a few months ago, people protested, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So in the simplest possible case, we just count up the number of galaxies. So here are the number counts, the differential number counts in these fields. On the left is the COSMOS fields, on the right is the lens fields. And what you see is a sort of the typical increase as you go to fainter systems. You see this turnover due to the limited exposure time. And down at the right end, you see the effect of small number statistics in these fields. So if you can look at the lens fields, the mean lens field number counts are represented by the red line, and the mean COSMOS number counts are represented by the blue line. So you do see a slight excess here around 20th magnitude. If I zoom in, this is now represents a fractional difference of each of the lens fields to the COSMOS mean. And you can see once again that there is a bump here. The reduced chi-squared for that is around just under 2. So it has some significance. But I should point out that this is at the level where there's sort of the typical number of galaxies per field is 5-ish. And so we're talking about maybe 2 to 3 to 4 extra galaxies per field. So once again, maybe this is just the actual local environment of the lens. Okay, so as I mentioned, I have the COSMOS fields, and their location on the sky are represented by this sort of yellow diamond. And so the problem was people said, well, what happens if the COSMOS fields lie along a biased line of sight? Maybe 1 square degrees is not enough. And so what I'm doing is I'm currently expanding this sample, looking at Lin Yan had an ACS parallel program whereby she has the fields marked in red. And I'm currently reducing, they're calibrating these data as part of the Hagel's pipeline. Phil Marshall's going to tell us about Hagel's later today, and so this is something that's very much in progress, and this will provide a sort of a check on the control sample. All right, so my conclusion based on the first two parts of the talk are these. So the initial analysis of the large-scale structure data indicates that lenses may lie along slightly biased lines of sight, but I think it's still too early to say whether or not that effect is just due to the local environment of the lens. This is something that Leon and I are looking into. And so this large-scale structure effect could be a zero mean effect. Obviously, we need better statistics, so more lens systems observed with ACS would be nice. The local environments, as Anne has shown, do need to be investigated individually. This is not a zero mean effect, and this is something that really needs to be looked at. But what we've found for the time delay systems are that there's effect of a few percent. And this is trying to also take into account the large scale structure along the line of sight. Okay, so in the remaining 1 minute, I'm going to just change topics completely and talk about the very local environment of one particular lens. This is the lens 2045 plus 265. It was discovered in the class survey. And Marusha mentioned in her talk this cusp relation where if you have these three images close together, that the central one should be, it's the flux of the central one should be the sum of the two outer ones. Chris Kachanek talked about this as well. And this one, you can see possibly from this radio image, this is a deep radio image I got, that B is the weakest of the three rather than the strongest of the three. So this is an obvious problem for the models. None of the smooth macro models can reproduce this. And this is an obvious case where substructure, as Chris mentioned, might be able to explain this. And so here's the HST imaging of this. I've made a color image from WIFPIC 2 and NICMOS. And here you see the three lensed images. Here's the lens in galaxy here. Here's the fourth image here. These are stars. This is an M star. I have a very, very, very long Keck spectrum of that M star. So if someone wants that, just let me know. But the new results are from an adaptive optics image that we got with Keck. This is the paper that John McKean is writing up. And here you see the adaptive optics on the left. You see once again the three lensed images. Here's the lens of galaxy. Here's the fourth image. The two stars down here. And what you may see is there's a little blob in here, which when we went back and looked at the HST data, is also there. You see it if you split the data. From the AO imaging as well. And what we've done is we've made a quick little model. If you put mass where that light is, and if it's sort of a stripped, sort of very flattened mass distribution, you can reproduce the flux ratios that you see in the system. And this is the lens model that Leon has come up with. And so I just want to say this is sort of a really interesting little effect. Unfortunately, there aren't too many lens systems that have bright stars next to them that allow you to do this adaptive optics. We have adaptive optics imaging from Keck of three more lens systems, and we're looking into those now. So just to conclude, I'll just say that it is very important to look at the environments of lens and galaxies. It's interesting and something for you to consider. Thanks.
I have a silly question. Yep. So the lenses are not obviously a random line of sight because they point ACS where they know there is a lens.
Right.
So when you do your number counts, do you remove the lens?
No, I don't.
Okay, because the lens is probably at the position where you see the bump.
Possibly.
So yes. That's creating an excess of one. There.
Right, but I mean, yes, and so this is what we're looking into. I mean, but the thing is, what's to prevent the Cosmos field from containing a bright elliptical as well?
No, because it's there.
Right,
you're
right.
Pointing around one.
Right, right. So this is why I'm not claiming. In fact, my conclusion from this is that and Leon's going to respond. But my conclusion from this is that the lenses are along random lines of sight, and that this, I don't really believe that this is a significant effect. Yeah. I can do that. Let me just say that in the case of say 1608, that the lens of galaxy is way on the bright side. It's not at that 20th magnitude. So something there.
I mean, it's true that it sits in an overdensity. So what we're doing now is to take a reasonable two-point correlation function for these types of ellipticals, and then just do the integral over it, and see what you expect in terms of the additional number count of galaxies, and see whether that actually fits the bump. If it does, then the additional galaxies are purely due to the local overdensity and not due to anything along the line of sight, and that needs to be tested now.
Yeah, as Eva Momcheva has pointed out to me several times, you know, our distributions, if you looked at the predicted effects of the impact parameter versus the offset and redshift from the lens of the perturber, those distributions are broader than we expected, but they're not that broad in the sense that if you have a bunch of structure clustered up in redshift space around the lens that's not necessarily bound to the lens, that is really the structure that contributes significantly to the analysis.
Sure.
You're averaging over pretty long beams here, and I guess I wondered, and I don't know if that effect could be washed out by this kind of analysis. Have you considered using photometric redshifts or something to at least limit the systems that are being counted here to those that might have the most effect on the lens?
This is certainly something that I have considered. The problem with this particular control sample is that COSMOS is a single band, and so you can't do that. I would also point out that the effect is that we see is at a fairly bright level. So we're not going to the faintest galaxies, which are, you know, you could assume are pretty far in the background. So I would say that this sort of magnitude range that we're exploring sort of naturally reproduces maybe the redshift range that we're interested in for the effects on lensing. I mean, certainly this is something we can do. Some of the GAN fields have multiple bands. And yeah, the problem is a lot of the other big surveys do not have F814. Their I band or whatever is a different one. They use either Sloan I or use something else. And so it's hard to come up with a good sample that's also large enough to do this well, but that's certainly something that we could look into. I'm not sure you have to worry about it so much.
In 2045, that little thing that fixes everything, how can you give a rough estimate of what its mass is?
Yeah, so its mass is, I believe, around 1/50th of the mass of the lensing galaxy. But I don't have a number for you. I mean, it's sort of, you know, what you might expect for sort of a dwarfish galaxy. I didn't mention that John has just recently done a sort of a photometric redshift analysis of it, and he finds that it does appear to be at the same redshift as the lens. Which sort of surprised me after that came out as close as it did. I mean, the picture that we have is that it's sort of a small satellite galaxy that has been stripped. I mean, as I said, the mass distribution is very flattened in order to reproduce this. Actually, when I showed this picture in Leiden, people, you know, started saying, well, what about this little blob here? And, you know, this is something we haven't looked at that carefully. I mean, this is one that is obviously the most significant blob that we can see, and
So would that fall under the category of what people call substructure?
Yeah, so we had this discussion sort of early on in this program here where I mean, I think it might fall into the range of masses that people call substructure, but it's, you know, obviously luminous substructure. Because I don't know the actual mass, I don't really want to say, but I think it, you know, sort of, if you look at sort of the local universe and look at sort of small satellite galaxies, it falls into that range, so it's maybe not so exciting. But, you know, as this was one of the lenses where people said it could be dark CDM substructure, you know, non-luminous substructure, the fact that we find something that can explain it, that is luminous, maybe is interesting.
We'll return at 10:45.